from the heart of the Forest City, this is a Craig Needles podcast brought to you by Lexus of London. Now here's your host, Craig Needles.
Craig Needles podcast Friday roundtable here as we wrap up September. It's September 30th, which is hard to believe. That, of course, means that today is the day of truth and reconciliation, which we're not going to get into on this podcast, but out today from the Blackburn Media Podcast Network is a new episode of the 519 podcast, which is called Truth and Reconciliation Beyond the Orange Shirt. We talked to some Indigenous leaders here in London and other communities around London as well. So if you're looking for content about Truth and Reconciliation Day, I strongly recommend that you download that podcast. Some fascinating conversations on there, including with a good friend of mine who's been a guest on this podcast a few times, Sarah May Chitty, who works over at Western University. So I strongly recommend you download that podcast if that's what you're looking for. As for this edition of the Friday Roundtable, what we are talking about, let's first discuss who we're talking about it with, which is, of course, Dan Wiley, who's the program director of Classic Rock 98.1 joining us, Jared Zafin, the London Home Builders Association, former city councillor is here as well, as is former political candidate Carol Dick. Good morning, everybody. Thank you for being here. Glad that you're here with us today.
Good morning.
It's actually the afternoon. I don't know what I'm thinking. Anyway, so let's get started first with election stuff. And it was a bit of a weird week. And I had some people message me this week and say, Craig, a lot of this stuff that's become election stories is getting traction because there just isn't a whole lot for people to sink their teeth into. And I may agree with that. We'll get into that in a second. But first, I want to talk about endorsements. Khalil Rimal had a news conference this week over at the London Music Hall of Fame, in which he said that the power brokers in London have picked who the next mayor is. The most powerful people in the city have already picked who the mayor is. Now, last I checked, no one's cast a ballot just yet. But do you think that this election is a fait accompli, as Khalil Rimal accused folks of when he said that he was not, in fact, resigning from the race? What was your reaction to that particular story?
I think, frankly, you know, if you're coming out the gate like that, I think you're almost insinuating that you yourself maybe don't have as great of a chance as maybe you think you should. So I think that, you know, depending how you carry yourself and the confidence you do in your campaign can go in different ways. As far as the endorsements, I always think that, you know, when I was running for council, I had some of my former competitors endorse me, which I think, you know, went very well. And I think generally, if you have endorsements, it's usually a good sign, because it is meaning that people that may have different views than you are supporting you or find ways to work with you. And if someone is upset about endorsements, I find generally more than typically it's because people, you know, maybe are upset because they didn't get the endorsements themselves, or, you know, aren't getting the support that they see others are getting.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, there was a few issues that I had with his statement. First of all, he said that it was partisan. I'm not quite sure how getting a Liberal, an NDP, and a Conservative to endorse you is partisan. I mean, if it was just one party going for it, then sure. What he's really just showing by getting those endorsements is that he's got wide support and he knows how to work with people, how to collaborate with other people. And so really, the issue with Rimal should have been, well, now I've got to get myself some strong endorsements. That's how you react to that. I need to get some strong endorsements and show people what I've done and that I deserve this. And, you know, endorsements work both ways. Just because he got them doesn't mean that everyone's going to be voting for Josh Morgan. You know, endorsements can work both ways, in that if somebody endorses someone and you don't like that person, you're maybe not going to pick that person to vote for. So, you know, there's been a lot of people that have been angry about some of the endorsements that are happening, but, you know, not all endorsements necessarily mean someone's going to vote for you.
And I just think it's a how do you say this nicely? I don't think he cares as much about the endorsements, minus like the ego of having them, so much as I'm so far behind, I need to make news, and I need to, like, every other day this person's getting an endorsement that's getting talked about, nobody's talking about me, so I need to do something to get people to talk about me, because, you know, municipal politics does not always move the needle of popular conversation. So I have no problem with what he said, because I think it was just politics as usual from people who are trying to get elected. I don't see it as
And I agree with that it was absolutely an election play. This wasn't the sanctity of our electoral values play. This was a hey, I'm going to sort of craft this narrative that that I'm the underdog and whatever it happens to be, which, you know, fine. That's a way to campaign. Go ahead and do that. I just don't know how effective that's going to be.
I also think that, you know, the idea that the statement, something like this is, you know, the power brokers are the ones making, you know, the decisions in this election. You know, I think that, you know, if you're someone that is going to be voting in this election or planning to, I just don't know how that sits with you, you know.
I love that so much because it's such a runner-up thing to say that. Oh, it's the power, it's the establishment, it's the man deciding who's going to be the next mayor, not the people. It's like, come on. Let's be honest. All elections are decided roughly the same way with the exact same amount of influence. I'm not sure that this one's any different. And
no,
but I love it. I think it's so much fun when somebody wants to go down that path of combative politics.
Well, and I think, Craig, you kind of said this before, but you know, this election is not very exciting, to put it, I think, lightly, which is
certainly
which is
the
okay.
Mayor's race is not exciting.
You know, which I think is all right. And frankly, I think it's what I think people in the city have almost been hoping for over the last number of years. Not in the way that it's not exciting or there's not something to get really, you know, animated about. But I do think that, you know, we've had so many issues, especially in the mayor's seat in previous years.
Now that you mention it.
That people wanted a bit more calm. So, you know, the fact that there isn't anything that's, you know, a major conflict or anything that's burning issues isn't necessarily the worst thing either.
Yeah. We're not coming off of a council term with a national scandal at the mayor's chair, which is
much to my disappointment.
I'm disappointed too, if I'm being honest. But it's the first time in a while London's been in that position. So
quite a while.
Yeah, kind of cool. Well, I will say this. The last time that we had a mayor of London who was elected that did not wind up as at the center of a scandal that made national news, to varying degrees, to be clear, but that made national news, was Tom Gosnell in 1986. I was one when Tom Gosnell was elected. I am currently 37. So, yeah, it's been a little bit. It's been a little bit.
I'll agree that I think people – I don't think people like an active city hall scandal-wise. I do think it's good to get people talking about it in whatever way to help remind people that coming up at the end of October, there is an election. And I think that's probably a bigger concern for everybody running, not just for the mayor but for council and any other position, is – making sure you get turnout. So any story you can do to get people there aware of it is probably good.
Absolutely. And especially with how low the voter turnout was in the spring, I think, you know, municipal elections usually are even lower. So, you know, we have, it could be very bad numbers this time around. And I've knocked on a lot of doors for different candidates. And there's a lot of people who don't really seem to know that there's an election coming.
Yeah. 43% in the election in June, the provincial election. Maybe 35. Like if I were setting a line, I would say 35.5% and ask people to take the over the under. And I would hope for equal action on both sides. But I still think that might be high. That might be high.
I think it might be high.
I'm on the pessimistic side there, unfortunately. Yeah. I do think there is fatigue from two previous elections, COVID, and again, not a major hot button issue in this election. Mm-hmm. So,
and here's the other thing. We just talked about a mayor's race where there hasn't been a lot going on. Like usually the mayor's race is what drives people to go to the polls, right? And that's not really happening. Like I think we have a pretty good idea as to who might wind up winning that race. And like you look at some of the ward campaigns, like you look at Ward 2 and you look at Ward 12 and you think to yourself, what's driving people to the polls in those spots? Like I think we kind of know who's going to win these races, right? So I think it's going to be a low number, put it that way. I want to talk about election signs before we wrap up. And that was the other thing that happened this week, which I think in a normal campaign wouldn't have been such a big deal, but wound up being a big deal. A couple of the big billboard signs were dropped off in the wrong spots in Ward 11. There was a YouTube video made by Jeremy McCall about the situation there. Skylar Frank says, hey, you know what? No, this is not something that I wanted to do. I contracted a company to do this. They put the billboards in the wrong spots, which I believe, and we'll get to why in a second. This leads me to back to this point, something I say quite regularly. Do you think that we need to have a situation where the rules for election signs, and Waterloo Region's already done this, the rules for election signs are private property, yes, public property, no. Is that something we need to do? Because it does get to a little bit of a visual pollution, and we get into situations where people are arguing about where signs should or shouldn't be. That would kind of solve that problem right away. What are your thoughts on that?
I mean, as someone who's run, and Carol's run elections before, it's, I don't know, personally, I think that it's nice to be able to have at least in the public realm that's not necessarily on private property, signage to some extent, especially as just a way to, you know, show that there's an election happening. I do, you know, it's funny, I've been to Quebec City a few times, and I don't know the exact rules there, but something I did notice there was that generally the election signs are on telephone poles. And are just limited to that for public areas.
Oh.
And so, you know, something to that effect where it's very limited, but having still an opportunity. Because I do think, I mean, we've kind of been going in this direction where we've been veering away from, you know, or less, having less public signs and more trying to focus on the private. But I do think that, you know, there's still people are also getting a bit more concerned about their privacy, and maybe they don't want to show which candidate they're supporting. And so still having an opportunity for candidates to have, you know, ability to sort of show themselves off in some way in public, I think is still important.
Yeah, it's one of those things that it's both sides. So we were just talking about having low voter turnout. Mm-hmm. And one of the ways to get people knowing that there's an election is seeing the signs out there on public property. However, personally, I would love to see a lot less signage. It is a bit of an eyesore. Obviously, there's a waste situation there. It would be great if it could just be, you know, bus shelters and bus stops and telephone poles. That would be great. But really, the signs just become a distraction from the other issues like we saw this week. And, you know, obviously there are going to be mistakes that happen with signs. I've had a mistake made in one of my elections, 2019. Billboards got swapped in the wrong ward, in the wrong riding. And, you know, mistakes can happen. And it just shouldn't become the focus of the election. It should really be more about the issues and you know, what's going on in the city, personally. That's what I think.
Yeah, well, like, I get it. Like, there are election rules, and they're in place for a reason, where you can and can't put signs, where you can and can't campaign, what you can and can't do with the website, and we want people to follow in those rules. But I think it's pretty clear that that one was incidental from this perspective. If I was going to break a rule with one of those giant billboard signs, I would do it on October 20th. I would not do it in late September. Do it on October 20th and say, hey, we can't get the truck back to move these signs for a week. So you're basically saying to the City of London, either you move these or no one's going to move these. And whoops, what can you do? And the sign's up there on election day. That's how cynical me would do it if I was going to break the rules. Not that I'm suggesting this to you, local campaign listeners. I'm just saying that if I was going to do that, that's how I would do it. Dan, do you think that election signs are site pollution during these races? They get to be a little bit too intense?
No. No, it's again, as I, the only thing that I wish was mandated for signs or bylawed for signs was that all of them had to also include the election date. So do this, your candidate, and the date of the election, because the whole purpose is to promote the fact that there's an election and that you need to vote for somebody. And most people are terrible at marketing themselves. So tell people when. Like, that's, to me, like, the issue with the signs isn't that there are signs, for me, because I don't care that much, because I know it's just a short period of time. I just care as somebody who works in a business that involves marketing that you're just bad at it. Like, the signs are boring. They don't stand out. And you don't tell people, really, with the exception of vote, you don't tell them how to vote for you. And most people don't care enough to learn it themselves. Like, that's, and that's a really, I almost hate saying that with people who are running for election or have run for elections in the past sitting in the room with me, but the average person just is not that involved until you get your BRT issue where they drum up their support, or you have a COVID election where somebody really feels strongly about some kind of mandate one way or the other. But as for signs, I'm pro sign.
Yeah.
Also, I think there is an investment that you make when you run. Sorry, now I'm just filibustering.
Please.
there's an investment you make when you run, both in time and money. So there is something to be said about putting in the work to try and get the vote out. And signs are a part of that.
Yeah. Fair enough.
I do like the idea of, you know, mandating having signs have the election date on them, because I mean it is, I mean, if part of the idea obviously is making sure people are aware of an election upcoming. We want to make sure people vote. So having the
wait till you get to my best idea, which is one election day, federal, provincial, municipal, one day, then you'll get voter turnout.
Yeah.
I think it's a good idea, you know, to have the election date on it. But right away, my mind went to, oh my gosh, how would I have to change all my signs? Because we reuse the same signs. It's like, I'd have to change the date on every single one.
Unless the election's always on the same date.
Ah, that's true. But, you know, when there's federal elections, it one gets election called early.
Day.
No,
it's true. One day, it's gonna happen. Yep. We'll realize.
Is there a country somewhere that just always does their election the same date, whether it falls, no matter what day of the week it falls on?
I think it's more like the U.S. where it's the first Tuesday in November.
If there is a country out there where they do that, please let me know on Twitter or whatever, because I want to know how it works and how it does. Because I think that would actually not be a bad idea from the perspective of, oh, I didn't know there was an election. Yeah, there is. Of course there was. There's always one on October 24th every single year. But anyway, or every 2 years, whatever it happens to be. Let's talk about weather. Before we do that, I do want to talk about our friends over at Lexus of London. Lifestyle with a drive. Your new Lexus is patiently waiting for you at Lexus of London. Luxury redefined. You can choose yours today at the award-winning Lexus of London, 1065 Warncliffe Road South, and online at lexusoflondon.com. And of course, we thank our friends over at Lexus of London for sponsoring the Craig Needles podcast. Let's talk about hurricanes. Bad weather week. Significant devastation on the east coast of Canada. Lots of devastation in Florida as well. Two separate storms, and they packed a wallop. Do we just have to get used to the fact that around this time of year, there's going to be storms and there's going to cause some damage? And for us, not really a big thing here in London, where the closest body of water we have is the Great Lakes. It's not really going to cause us much of an issue. But if you live on Canada's East Coast, or if you live on the East Coast of the United States, well, all of a sudden it becomes a thing. So do we just have to get used to this, and do governments here in Canada and in the United States as well have to become better prepared for things like this? Because it just seems like it's going to be something that perhaps happens a little more regularly going forward as our climate changes, if you want to call it that.
Yeah.
Well, I'll start by saying that we might not get hurricanes, but there are certainly tornadoes that rip through here, which would fall under the same category. And we also would deal with snow and ice storms, which can be worsened by climate change. So I think government preparedness needs to be there, because every region deals with its own climate and has challenges within that respect.
Yeah. Well, I saw some of the stuff and it looked ugly. And again, maybe there's no way to avoid the fact this is just going to happen sometimes, and the weather is going to do bad things, and it's going to destroy homes and going to destroy property. What are your thoughts on that, Carol?
I could talk about this for like an hour or more. I have a lot of opinions.
We have a lot of time. Yeah.
First of all, I mean, yeah, there's two different issues there. It's not just like, do we just have to accept this and get used to it? It's more about being prepared to deal with it. So we do know that obviously our climate is going to be changing. We're going to have more extreme weather events. For me, when you brought up this topic, it made me think of British Columbia, where I'm from, and we now refer to the fire season, and it's something that we've had to, quote unquote, get used to. And there's the government hasn't necessarily prepared itself to deal with some of these situations. And we've seen this happen, entire towns being wiped off the face of the map and having to be rebuilt, and then followed by floods because there have been these horrible storm events and also heat domes. So obviously our climate is changing and we're going to be having a lot of events. Our government needs to, number one, step up to make sure that they're prepared to deal with the situation, be able to get the information out to people quickly if something is happening, be able to evacuate people, get the services they need to them. But at the same time, on the provincial and the federal level, we need to see more action from our government to actually address the source of the issue and start changing towards better energy sources, cutting our emissions, and actually living up to our obligations on the international stage.
Yeah, to Carol's point, I think there's two approaches, right? One, there's the preventative, and then the one there's trying to, also proactively plan from a policy perspective how we're doing things broadly, but also from a I think infrastructure perspective specifically. And I think, you know, I can't remember, I was listening to an interview, it might have been Port of Basque, that had a storm come through a while ago and had a report on what they needed to do from an infrastructure perspective to be ready for, you know, the next storm. And nothing, if my understanding is correct, they didn't go ahead with it. Nothing had gotten done. And so, you know, it's just governments need to step to the plate in investing in infrastructure to prepare for these types of things, because we know they're here. We know they're coming. And even though, I mean, you know, certainly the Great Lakes has its own impacts, whether it's climate changing, but, you know, Lake Erie has been eroding for a long time. And, you know, my understanding is that Lake Huron is now going to be in dealing with a lot of erosion issues over the next while as well. So, you know, there's different ways, even in the region, that we need to kind of get ready and prepare for these events.
Absolutely. I mean, some of the things are that, you know, before you'd have engineering that would be dealing with the 100-year storm, but now it really should be the 200-year storm. Or do we need to make it even greater than that? And also, I've written a lot of the policies for, you know, different organizations on climate adaptation and mitigation. A lot of those reports, you write them, you give them, and then they just sit there. You don't see anything happen. So, I mean, we have to be prepared. And I just want to use an example. My sister lives in an area in British Columbia where there's lots of fires, and they are not happy with their government because it's a very difficult area to get off of. And the government's plan for them is that they head into the ocean. Not necessarily, like, if you don't have a boat, well, too bad, but just head into the ocean, someone will come rescue you. And that was what they were told to do. That is not a policy to deal with forest fire.
No, that seems like a really bad idea.
It is interesting, too, just you talk about the, and I don't know, maybe you know better, Carol, how exactly gets classified as a 100-year or 200-year or what those things are, but it seems like we're having more of them, and it's, you know, obviously it hasn't been 100 years or 200 years, so I'm always just kind of curious of maybe there's a reclassification of that.
And that's what I think, is that now, because of the way things have changed, we need to reclassify how we're dealing with things. We have to think about, how big is that storm surge going to be? How big do our walls have to be to protect from storm surges coming from the ocean? Things like that. I mean, it's just not happening fast enough to how quickly our climate is changing.
No, and we're going downhill on that as well, right? Like, we've already, the boulder's been pushed off, and now it's just collecting steam, or the snowball has just been collecting steam. But I'll defend governments in only this way, that it's really hard to campaign and win on this issue, because it didn't take 6 months for this to happen, and it's not going to take 6 months for it to get fixed. And so the policies that you're putting in place now are really to hope that 20, 30, 40 years from now we're better. And you hope that when you lose the next election and the next group comes in, that they don't say, that's a terrible plan, we're going to do something else. And that's the issue that we run into, is that every time we change governments, different priorities get put in. And even if let's live in, you know, Candyland, where they all have the best intentions, they just have different views on how to get to that point. And so progress that was made gets stopped. And so, like, that's where I'll defend that it's easy to say that government needs to work faster. It's really hard for government, I think, to implement that.
Well, I think you've just given exactly the reason why we need electoral reform, so that we can have governments where it's much more diverse, and, you know, we're not having this pendulum swing between two parties and having policies taken down, you know, just because another party put them into place. We need our government to be able to make long-term policies and long-term plans, because this short-term does not work for the current crisis that we're in.
Yeah, there's definitely an element to that. I want to talk about one more thing, more of a local issue, before we wrap up this edition of the Craig Needles Podcast, and that's what's going on over at ArcGate, which I haven't talked about very much on the podcast at all. But I'll give you a quick catch up if you don't know the story. So ArcAid is an organization in the City of London. They had to leave the spot they were at, offering services to those who are homeless or are dealing with poverty. They then headed over to First Baptist Street Church. And at that point, the City of London eventually said, hey, wait, this is a violation of the bylaw. You're going to have to sort of change the way this is run here, because the bylaw says the church can only run their own services. They can't be sort of giving space to somebody else. And that's what they're doing here. Now, stopping a church from having services for, and I don't mean church services, but services for people who are experiencing financial difficulty, that sounds like something municipal government should absolutely not be doing. I get it. They're going to say the rules are the rules, and that's fine. We can talk about that. But there appears to be some progress here in trying to figure out a way to not have this be a violation of the bylaw, which is great. My question is, did it need to get to this point? I know that the City of London is not supposed to just look at bylaw complaints and kind of ignore what's going on, but can't you just ignore what's happening with a church doing things to help people who are needing some assistance from whoever it happens to be in order to, you know, feed themselves and have a place to go? It just feels like this was something that didn't need to get as ridiculous as it did. What were your thoughts on the Arcade story?
Well, my thoughts, first of all, is that I don't think that they interpreted the bylaw correctly. If you look at Section 2, mm-hmm. and if you look at what they want it to say, is that it's an assembly hall instead of a place of worship. Well, if you look under assembly hall, it does say political actions. And I happen to know that a number of places of worship hold political debates. I've been to a number of them there. They also have the voting there. That's a political action. So right then you'd have to say, well, are you going to stop all of that that currently is happening in the city? The other issue is, you know, charitable actions are absolutely something that is a part of a place of worship. And so in that case, they are doing something that is continuing on your way of showing your faith. The other issue that I see is that they absolutely have a number of other items that go on that are of a social nature in the churches that have nothing to do with religion, like any kind of Girl Guide group or Brownie group. There's music shows, things like that. So are you no longer going to allow a place of worship doing things like that? So if you look at the two of them, it seems like there's a big cross between the two of what is allowed and what is not allowed. And I think that it's ridiculous to say, oh, no, you have to be in assembly hall to be able to do these actions, when nothing to me shows that they violated that bylaw in any way.
And I don't know, one thing I'm curious about, and I'm not certain of, is how long it took for the city to issue that versus how
they
long...
They had been there for a couple of months. Yeah. Now, I don't know when the complaint started coming in, but...
But certainly on issuing it, clearly, you know, if I just think back to city council when I was there and, you know, political ongoings, then maybe there were some, you know, discussions throughout that time and holding off on doing anything like this. And I think to Carol's point, I think if you were to challenge this, like the bylaw and the complaint, like I don't know if this would actually fly as far as the complaint. I can't say for
now,
sure.
Now,
does the
church and Arcade have cash to pay lawyers to do this is a question, but
right,
yes,
for sure. And I don't think it needed to get to this point, but I do think, you know, what we're seeing here is a snippet into a bigger issue in our community, which is homelessness and different issues that we have in our community. And, you know, clearly like these individuals and some of these issues that I'm certain people were complaining about were elsewhere in the city. And now all of a sudden they're in a more central spot with you know, businesses nearby, with residents nearby that I'm sure were happier when they were somewhere else. Not to say that's a positive thing, but I imagine that's what's gone on here. And it's unfortunate because places of worship, I mean, people, you know, think about their church, their synagogue, their mosque, wherever, their temple, wherever it might be, you know, as places that are caring, that care for people. You know, most religions are, you know, want to help people. And so the idea that they are doing exactly that, I think fits with the church's mission and what they're supposed to be doing. Where this goes in the future, though, I think is the bigger problem. And it's trying to find a bigger solution to these broader issues, because it doesn't matter where they are in the city. I think there's going to be people that aren't happy one way or another.
Yeah, that's true. And there's always going to be the NIMBY element of this. I want to ask you a council question. First, I want to ask you this, Dan. Did this need to be what it is? Did this have to be the pain to wind up being?
No, I don't think so. And I kind of had two thoughts on it, because I always feel with bylaw enforcement, it's a slippery slope argument. That's why we have the bylaws, because, well, if we let this happen, then this is going to happen. And so here's a church that's helping homeless people. Well, that's a slippery slope, because maybe one day those homeless people might have dignity and get a home. Like, is that what we're really concerned about here? And I really am bothered by the fact, with the complaint, it's really easy to complain about homeless people because of the stigma attached to people who are homeless. And so that's why there was a, that was why there was a complaint, and that's why there's bylaw enforcement, is because somebody feels like, not in my neighborhood, I don't mind Girl Guides being here, I don't mind them soliciting and selling cookies, but I don't want a homeless person here because they're going to bring crime or any of the other stereotypes that you attach to that. So I think that's part of it. That's an easy thing to attack. And the city, unfortunately, gets forced that way to do it. But I really have a problem, and this is the second part to that, is when you stop somebody from doing something good, you should have to come up with a solution before you stop it. Yep. Because London has a very serious homelessness issue that's not going to go away anytime soon. The church is trying, along with Arcade, to do something to make it a little easier for those people who are suffering. You don't want them to do that there. Okay, great. What's your solution? You can't just come with a complaint. You got to come with something that's tangible and fixable, so that, because we all acknowledge that there is a problem. So no, I don't think it needed to come this way. And I have other thoughts on how we treat homeless people, but that's not for this particular podcast.
Want to ask you, Jared, there were a lot of people being critical on the city council for not stepping up and saying, hey, this is not okay, this is not right. My read of the situation is they can't do that. You've been under the same rules that they're under right now. Is that accurate? Are they not allowed to take issue with decisions the bylaw office has made?
Yeah, it's you know, I think at one point when I was on council, I did that, and I was told that was not my place to do so. Okay. And I mean, I think it comes from a good place where you don't want political influence generally with bylaw enforcement. That being said, you know, can someone have a general opinion about whether or not they felt this was a good thing to do or not? I think that is fine. But I think people are cautious, and certainly as well, you know, the idea that this is a bylaw issue and leave it with bylaw is, I think, an easier thing to manage than getting into a larger political issue as a politician.
So. Yeah. Well, especially here during an election, you would suspect.
Absolutely.
Last thing on this, Carol, I'll ask you before we wrap up. What do you think that the right solution looks like here? And maybe your opinion is the right solution is that everything stays the way it is and we leave them alone. What do you think the right solution is to this?
Well, I think, a combo of that. I think that they should just leave it alone. I don't think that they're actually violating the bylaw according to how it looks when you actually read it. But that's my interpretation of it. But I also agree with Dan that we need some more solutions to actually address the issue.
Because this isn't a solution. This is a Band-Aid.
This is a Band-Aid. This is not the whole thing. And we're coming into another winter, and, you know, it gets even harder for people at that time to be homeless and, you know, not have the things that they need. The last thing we need to be doing is taking away a service from people. So, you know, address the larger issue, because it isn't just going to go away.
Yeah, no, I would certainly agree with that. Let's wrap up the Craig Needles podcast here, because we've got to move along with the day, and there's a whole lot of other stuff going on today that I've got to handle. So thank you very much to Dan and to Jared and to Carol for coming and doing the podcast with us. Thank you very much to our friends over at Lexus of London for bringing you the Craig Needles podcast. Lexus of London, where luxury redefined. You can choose your new Lexus today. It's patiently waiting for you at the award-winning Lexus of London. It's luxury defined, and you can find them at 1065 Warncliffe Road South and online at lexusoflondon.com. More of the Craig Needles podcast available at classicrock981.com, as well as londonnewstoday.ca, and wherever you get your podcasts.
The Craig Needles podcast is a presentation of the Blackburn Media Podcast Network.